The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Before kicking off this week's show, I want to let people know that it's time for the 14th Annual Podcast Awards. You can nominate our show to compete among the top sports podcasts on the internet. We want to be in there every year competing, and maybe one of these years we can pull down the top spot. You can go to podcastawards.com and nominate us. You can also sign up to be selected to be part of the group of listeners who will be randomly selected to vote. So once again, please go to podcastawards.com and click on the big button on the front page to register, and you can nominate our show in the sports category. Let's get on to the show. This is the Seahawkers Podcast, episode 255. And it is July, and every year around this time, we start checking in with our NFC West rivals to see what changes have been made since the end of last season, talking coaching changes, talking players that have been brought in free agency, talking about the draft picks. And last week, we checked in with the Arizona Cardinals. And now we move on to the 49ers with Oscar of the Better Rivals podcast. Oscar, welcome back on. I got to say, I always enjoy this, knowing that the season is right around the corner.
I know. This is an annual tradition at this point, coming on the Seahawkers pod and catching up. And I'm loving the consistency, because this is now, what, year four?
It might even be year five, because we did one show together right before the NFC Championship game in 2013.
Yep.
And so I think the 2014 offseason, if we started it then, this would be 5 years, right?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Holy smokes. Well, we have two matchups, of course, coming up on the schedule, as per usual for NFC West rivals. And we don't see you guys until week 10, right before the Seahawks week 11 bye week. And that's going to be a game in Santa Clara, November 11th, Monday Night Football on ESPN. So I think Seahawks fans should probably know to get to the stadium around noon. Otherwise, you won't make it until halftime. The Seahawks close out the season at home week 17 against San Francisco, December 29th. And I'm kind of hoping, Oscar, that Seattle will already be locked in as the number one seed. And then it'll just be a game to knock San Francisco out of the playoffs using our third string quarterback, Geno Smith.
Man, that's some prognostication that I'm not sure is going to fly. I still think the Rams are probably going to end up top of the division. And I do think they backloaded those Seattle 49ers games for a reason, because I think week 10 and week 17 are probably going to have some pretty big playoff implications. I do think the Niners are, I'm glad they're not getting all the media darling hype that they were getting last year, because I think that'll let them concentrate on playing good football and not the hype. But I do think that they can be in the mix late in the year for a wild card spot. So I think, and that's, I think, where the Seahawks, of course, will be, because that's where they are perennially. So I think it'll be some, we're back to the time of the rebuild where these games matter again.
Well, we do hope that they do end up mattering down the stretch, because in past years, there's been some high expectations with the 49ers. And I want to get into that. But first, I want to start off, Oscar, with some of the Seahawks connections, because there are a few. The 49ers' biggest mistake of the offseason, which is cutting Cassius Marsh, leaving the door open for his return to Seattle.
Oh, man, you guys can have Cassius Marsh. I'm okay with that.
I was okay with him leaving, too, but I just thought that was the biggest connection of the offseason so far.
He ping-pongs back and forth. I mean, look, his biggest notable item is that his nickname is the Polar Bear, and I'm pretty sure that we paid him about $1 million per, like, swinging roundhouse kick.
I haven't heard that nickname. See, in Seattle, he's just known as being a big Magic the Gathering fan.
Yeah, that's, you know, I guess that he's playing to his base in Seattle. That makes sense.
Right.
I don't know how polar bears relate to the Bay Area, but that's, Cassius Marsh is, you know, he's fine. He was a necessary evil, and he was holding that seat warm, but I am 100% happier with the edge rushers that the 49ers have right now, because they are already going to be better than Cassius Marsh could be.
Yeah, you guys are looking pretty good there. And I do want to talk about your number two overall draft pick. But I also want to talk. I want to ask you how Richard Sherman is doing, because I miss that guy. And I have to know if he's changed the minds of the 49ers fans who disliked him for so many years, you know, having a full season now as a 49er.
Oh, I think so, and I hope so. I think if anyone was holding on to that, then, you know, they don't really quite understand how sports works, and they probably take it a little too seriously. You know, I've always been of the mind that I've always hated Richard Sherman because he was so good.
Right.
And I just didn't want him to not be on my team. But now that he is on my team, you know, how's he doing? His play is okay. He was apparently hampered by that Achilles, and even though he was playing, it was still limiting his explosiveness and his ability to play at a high level. I still think he is on the downswing of his career, but the hope is that he is much more healthy this year than he was last year, and that his play returns back to not necessarily peak Richard Sherman, but at least a little better than he was last year. Because there are some misleading stats with Richard Sherman last year that made him look better than he really was.
He got a lot of respect being on that side. And
he did.
And that came across in the stats, I think.
He did. People just didn't throw his way. And I mean, they respected Richard Sherman, but there were plenty of plays on tape where he was roasted, and the ball just didn't go his way, or the ball went over his head and it was uncatchable. And that looks like an incompletion, but it's not a forced incompletion. It's not something that he did. So I'm hoping that he gets a little better, a little back into form this year. But yeah, but Richard Sherman, I think at this point, is in the 49ers fold. He is one of the locker room leaders, you know, and I think that those Seattle rivalry days are not nearly as on the mind of 49ers fans nowadays.
Well, but you also have Malcolm Smith, Super Bowl 48 MVP, and well known for intercepting the pass to Michael Crabtree that was tipped by Richard Sherman in the 2013 NFC Championship.
For how long, though? I don't know. I don't know how much longer he's going to be on the team, because he's not someone
is in his final contract year, right? Now, didn't they restructure it?
And now he's contract.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I, you know, he was, I think, a mistake of a signing from the get go. There was no reason why he deserved the $25 million contract that he received when Shanahan Lynch took over. But he was an example of a player that he is in the bucket of players that when the 49ers front office decides they want to sign a player, they overpay, oftentimes in excess. And Malcolm Smith was one of those players. Of course, he got injured, and then now, you know, he's in the final year of a restructured deal, but he's going to get some competition from some of the youngsters at the linebacker spot. And honestly, it would not surprise me if he were a Seattle Seahawk come September.
Well, let's start there on defense then, because, you know, speaking of overpaying for linebackers, Kaywon Alexander, the biggest free agent signing in the offseason for the 49ers, he's set to become that main starter on the interior. You've got some young talent there. Fred Warner, David Mayo was a guy that was also picked up in free agency. Dre Greenlaw, a fifth round pick at linebacker as well. So quite a bit of competition there.
Yeah, that's one of the areas where it's going to be a bit more unsettled, because you don't have, you've got your two set starters, but then after that, it's a little open. So the Niners are switching to a different alignment preference. It's not a new scheme, it's not a new defense, but they are going to play a bit more wide nine this year with D Ford and Nick Bosa. I try real hard not to say Joey Bosa, but it's real hard.
it's like the Derek Carr and David Carr. I still say David Carr.
I know. I call them the San Diego Chargers. You know,
Just it'll take time.
I learned football in, like, you know, 2003, and then everything about that year is what's burned in my brain. And that's
right.
I think now that you've got a wider alignment from the defensive ends, now your on the ball linebacker becomes an off ball linebacker, and he's got to fill that C gap. So you don't need that big kind of Sam linebacker that the 49ers have had the last couple of years. And now all three 4-3 linebackers are a bit more interchangeable. And so that's, I think, where you're going to see players like Dre Greenlaw, who is a faster, smaller linebacker, be able to shine, even if he does have to play Sam. I think Elijah Lee probably has the inside track to be one of the linebackers, but Kwon Alexander, promising young guy. I still think he misses too many tackles and probably overpaid for him. He's in that Malcolm Smith bucket as well. Once they decided they wanted him, they were going to overpay for him. But I think Fred Warner's got some promise. hopefully Kwon is an asset in the pass game. And then from there, it's kind of an open battle.
Well, and you have a lot of competition on that defensive line, too. You know, you mentioned D Ford, kind of the biggest trade of the only big trade, I think, of the offseason, apart from draft picks and acquiring draft picks anyway. Nick Bosa, that number two overall pick. Now, I didn't know what to think with this, Oscar, because you and other 49ers fans, I feel like were wanting Nick Bosa all along. And when the 49ers beat the Seahawks last year, I thought that was going to put you out of the running for Nick Bosa going number one overall. But then Kyler Murray comes along and he takes that top spot and you guys get Nick Bosa anyway. And I don't know. I'm not too excited about it, honestly.
Oh, I'm super excited about that, man. We got to absolutely have our cake and eat it, too. We got a meaningless win against a rival that was going to torpedo draft position and then turns around. It didn't torpedo the draft position. It's the absolute best case scenario for what it is that 49ers fans wanted, because Nick Bosa, man, he is an absolute specimen. He's a tactician. He is an athlete that clears the bar for what you want an edge rusher. And he is so precise with his movements. I mean, you look at his pressures in college, only 8 of his 119 pressures were cleanup pressures, meaning that he's not benefiting from the defense kind of funneling the quarterback over to him, or a quarterback who's scrambling and he's, you know, kind of chasing him around and then finally drags him down, a la what happens to Russell Wilson a lot. He is actually getting to the quarterback on the vast majority of pressures. Only missed 5 tackles in his 3 years at Ohio State. And I mean, that's the kind of tackle you want when you've got someone as slippery as Russell Hustle Bustle, because that guy bathes in Crisco is really what I've come to conclude. Or he sprays his jersey down with Crisco or something.
Well, we could start that rumor. I mean, Jerry Rice is known for, putting the stickum on his gloves. So I suppose you guys need that on your side, too.
I don't know what you're talking about. What is stickum? What is this thing you're mentioning? This is a new word. I've never heard it.
How many first round picks do you guys need on the defensive line is what I need to know.
Well, currently the answer is 5, but there is no limit to the number that you can have. So look, I'm looking for maybe 6 or 7.
Yeah.
But yeah, 5 first round draft picks. Of course, all of them have different production levels in the NFL, but it is a formidable defensive line, and defensive lines in the NFL today, you have to have a deep rotation. And you ideally don't want your defensive line to play more than 500-600 snaps in a year. And it wasn't uncommon for DeForest Buckner back when the Niners were talent starved to play 900, 1,000 snaps. He played over 1,000 snaps 1 year. And you're looking at players like Fletcher Cox a couple years ago playing, you know, 550, 600 snaps. I think now the Niners are in a much better place with their rotation so that they have a bit of depth and they're not going to really put that much pressure and that much kind of wear and tear on the defensive tackle. So once it gets into week 10, week 17, you'll have a fresher DeForest Buckner, a fresher Bosa, a fresher Ford, all for chasing down Russell Wilson.
Yes, that's clearly something you need. But, you know, we've just as you've bolstered your defensive line with first round picks now, Seahawks fans and 49ers fans, here's a trivia question you can throw around. Who has more first round picks? Now, clearly you said 5 for the defensive line, so you do have more first round picks. But we've got 4 first round picks and 1 second round pick for our starting offensive line now.
Yeah, now that you don't have an atrocious offensive line coach, you actually can get some production out of there.
We can both laugh at Oakland together now.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. Let's laugh at Oakland. I think we should. The good thing about the offensive line, though, I think for the 49ers is that you've got first rounders on that offensive line, but they're much better at run blocking than they're at pass blocking. So they're good at the thing that doesn't really matter as much in football. And so, you know, if you're going to be good at something and you're the Seahawks, it's probably best that you're good at the thing that doesn't matter.
I think you've forgotten, though. We have the quarterback who rubs himself down with Crisco just to counteract that. So it's fine.
Yeah, I don't know if it was on your agenda to talk about, but I did want to talk about Brian Schottenheimer a bit, because last time I was giving you crap about Schottenheimer, and he's had a mixed result, right? Like, he still is probably persona non grata for a lot of Seahawks fans, but he's done a couple of really interesting things with that offense that probably I'm okay with saying he is not as bad of an offensive coordinator as I expected him to be when the Seahawks announced that he was going to be taken over.
I think we're actually both in the same boat on this. It's not as bad as it could be.
Yeah, which I guess is like it could be worse, but that's...
But, you know, yeah, being in the top six, I think, in points scored last year, I felt that that was even better than, you know, I was hoping for average.
Yeah, and that's exactly what you want. I mean, obviously, points scored per game. I think your points per drive was also pretty high. It was in the top 10. You look at the improvement, I thought was better than I expected. But yeah, points per drive were 19th in yards per drive. But you still had the highest three and out percentage in the league. So the offense was boom or bust, right? It was either you were chugging along on drives, you were making it work, or you were throwing it over the top to lock it because Russell Wilson is great at that, or you're three and outing it.
Right. And that's a big part of that is deciding to still run the ball on second and 10, taking penalties on first down, and just kind of doing the give up plays on second and third down. We saw a lot of that last year. So I see that as a place where they could improve in the future, but at the same time, it is tough to argue with it when you got the results that we did. Now, whether that's consistent from year to year, I guess we'll see in year two with Schottenheimer.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think seeing the 49ers defensive line go up against that offensive line is going to be, I think, what redefines that rivalry, because the Niners are going to be able to get after the passer. And Dee Ford was most successful in Kansas City because he was presented with favorable situations. He did not have to be the single pass rusher and carry the load. And honestly, when you're looking at the 49ers pre-Bosa, he was going to be the guy. You'd be able to slide protection over to his side, and you'd be able to catch a little bit of DeForest Buckner in that wash if he was lining up next to Dee Ford. But now with Bosa, you've got to pick your poison, and one of them is going to be left one-on-one if you slide protection. And Nick Bosa has proven that he can win, and he wins with his technique. Dee Ford wins with speed. And so it's going to be a little bit of where do you choose to slide? And at that point, you're kind of saying, well, I got to get something out quick. And that's, I think, going to be one of the more interesting battles for the Seahawks, because they are a better run blocking line and they do prefer to run. But what happens now if you've got a pass?
I think the biggest question is whether the guards can continue to stay healthy, whether it's, you know, Upati on the left side, which I know you're very familiar with him being a 49er for several years, and then on DJ Fluker on the other side, and clearly a better run blocker than pass blocker, but that's kind of where the team's strength is too. And I think as we get to the 49ers, I think we'll talk about the run game as being a strength on that side of the ball too, in terms of personnel anyway. But let's finish off with the back end of the defense, because I know you're all excited about the front seven, Oscar. But when you get to your corners and your safeties, I know there's some hope that Richard Sherman can bounce back a little bit to his previous form. You guys went and signed Jason Verrett as a free agent in the offseason, so maybe recognizing a weakness in Akella Witherspoon. I'm curious to know if you see Verrett as the starter now opposite Sherman, and how you feel about that back end with Jimmy Ward and Jaquaski Tartt.
Man, so this is going to be the Achilles heel, I think, for the Niners all year. They will go as far as the secondary allows them to go. And I think if the Niners are having a 7-9 year or a 6-10 year, which I think would be a disappointment for the Niners, you're probably going to look squarely at that pass defense and squarely at the secondary and be like, wow, they could not put it together. And likewise, I think if you see some of these players take a step forward, now you're talking about a couple games getting closed out, a couple things going their way, and them getting into that 9, maybe even eking out 10 wins, because I think that's probably their ceiling with the roster and its current construction. The offense is going to be fine. Kyle Shanahan's going to do amazing things with the offense, and I think it is that secondary that's going to be the key for the 49ers. Now, how do I feel about it? Not great, Bob, because they didn't do a lot to address it, and it was the clear biggest weakness for the team this offseason.
Right.
So the irrespective of whether you think that coverage or pass rush is more important, in situations where the 49ers were effective at rushing the passer, which they were, they had a league average pass rate, they had the worst EPA per play in the league on passing plays to wide receivers. That means that even if their pass rush was doing, you know, an average or better job, that secondary was still doing abysmally. And really all they did was, like you said, they signed Jason Verrett. Now, I think Jason Verrett is a really prudent, smart move. Why? Because if he can stay healthy, he's the best corner on the team right now. Problem is, can he stay healthy? So the question, do I view him as the starter? I think if he's healthy, absolutely. Mm. But chances are, he's not going to stay healthy a full 16 games. And so we're going to see Akella Witherspoon start alongside Richard Sherman at some point over the course of the year. And so it's probably going to be one of those two that starts. I think Kaywan Williams in the slot is okay. He's fine. But that's where you're going to be able to attack the 49ers, is along the edges. Now, I think the Seahawks got a little worse at wide receiver. When you lose someone like Doug
when you
Baldwin,
lose Doug Baldwin, yeah, you can't get better.
Yeah, I mean, that guy, he did a lot for that offense, and he's a phenomenal receiver, and it sucks. I hate to see really good players leave when you know, not on their terms, you know what I mean?
Right.
But I do think that will be, it kind of evens the playing field a little bit, but the safeties aren't in a super great spot either. I think Jaquaski Tartt is your only locked-in starter, but he has had some up and down games as well, and he's battled some injury items as well. And the thing that befuddles me the most about the 49ers is their insistence on Jimmy Ward as the solution at safety.
Mm.
Now, Jimmy Ward, for those that are not familiar, who aren't like super dialed into the Niners roster, he's a draft pick of the 49ers from a couple regimes ago, actually, but he has probably had more broken bones. I think the last four seasons have ended for him in a broken bone.
Wow.
And this season he broke his collarbone, but he broke it in minicamp. So he broke it early enough that he's still going to be available for the beginning of the season. But the dude is unfortunately made of glass, but the team loves him. And they've bounced him around from slot corner to outside corner to safety back to corner. And he just hasn't really had a chance to entrench himself in one spot, learn the intricacies and really succeed. His best fit is probably safety. But at this point, you have to wonder whether, A, he can stay healthy, and even if he is healthy, how good he is. And so when you're thinking about the thing that drives that cover three defense, well, I mean, you're thinking of, you know, the Seahawks know very well what Earl Thomas does for that defense. And now you're looking at someone who may play, may not play, and when he does play, he may not be very good. So that secondary is questionable. It really is. You're staring down a barrel of an aging Sherman, Witherspoon, who has shown that he could be good in flashes, but hopefully Verrett takes over, but then Verrett probably gets injured along with Jimmy Ward, who's already injured, and Jaquaski Tartt, who, you know, is TBD on how good he actually is. And they didn't do a whole hell of a lot else. I mean, Antoine Exum returns, DJ Reed returns, Marcel Harris. Like, these are not guys you want to hang your hat on. And we had another Seattle Niners bounce back in Dante Johnson. This is not what a winning secondary looks like, in my opinion.
Right. And really, to wait until their very last pick to even address corner in the draft with the 198th pick overall with Tim Harris, I mean, that's probably not a pick where you can count on him providing any real competition for a starting spot.
No, and you hope that he's got upside. You hope that he develops, but that's not where you're hanging your hopes.
No.
You really hang your hopes on someone like Jason Verrett or someone like Richard Sherman or someone like Akella Witherspoon. And I think the mistake that most fans make is they always say, well, when Akella Witherspoon takes the next step because he's learned a lot from last year, and when Richard Sherman returns back from injury, and when Jason Verrett, you know, finally stays healthy for a year, this secondary is going to be amazing. But what do we know about every football year is that some of those things break your way, but some of those things don't. And if just a couple of those don't break the Niners' way, then that secondary looks real dicey.
Right. And with injuries, you had plenty of guys that struggled through injuries last year, and we'll see how that comes, how they respond from that this year as well. So, well, let's move on to, let's start with special teams, because I don't want to forget about special teams. And you guys went out and you one-upped the Seahawks from the draft the previous year when Seattle took Michael Dixon in the fifth round. You guys took your punter, Mitch, in round four.
Man, wishing that didn't happen. Wishnowski is the punter. But yeah.
I saw that he got an 84 speed rating in Madden, though, so that's pretty strong.
That is a piece of information that I really wish I didn't know. It is a little absurd that they drafted a punter in the fourth round. And it's arguable whether he was even the best punter in the draft, right? Because Jake Bailey was the punter from Stanford that maybe the Niners could have had in the fifth round or even the sixth round. Of course, what the Niners will tell you is that the New England Patriots were probably circling the drain on a punter in the fourth or fifth round. They ended up taking a punter in the fifth round. And the word on the street is that when the Niners picked the punter Wisnowski in the fourth round, they got a text from Bill Belichick saying, nice pick.
Well, you always got to throw that out there.
Yeah, I still think it was not a smart move. They lost Bradley Pinion in free agency to Tampa Bay. And, punting is something that you don't necessarily need to spend a fourth round pick on. Imagine if you were to spend that fourth round pick on, I don't know, a corner or a coverage defender or something like that. But, you know, it's something the Niners felt they needed. He is an Aussie style punter, meaning he's got lots of different things in his arsenal. And he's the wave of Aussies coming in on Michael Dixon, who, if they're going to try to replicate Michael Dixon, I don't know that they'll be able to, because Michael Dixon is the definition of a generational talent punter, which puts him like right below a running back, basically. And that's not super high in my book.
But it's okay to take a fifth round pick when you get a Pro Bowler out of the deal, right?
I think so. But we took a look at what that really looks like and whether or not you're going to get like what the likelihood of getting a Pro Bowler is if you draft that punter in the fifth round. And we found that there is absolutely no correlation between where you're drafted and whether or not you're a Pro Bowler.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Because you have the Michael Dixons of the world, but then you've got lots of other punters that are perennial Pro Bowlers that were not drafted whatsoever.
Well, see, you're a Longhorns fan, so you should be able to tell us all about Michael Dixon.
Oh, yeah, Michael Dixon's great. I watched him punt daggers in everyone's soul. It was great. He was the highest graded punter in college. And if I remember correctly, he may be the highest graded punter in Pro Football Focus's college database. The dude was absurd. He's really, really good. I could understand picking someone like him in the fifth or the sixth round. But I don't know that all punters from Australia are going to fit that mold.
Well, you just got to hope that you've got one now.
Yeah, it'll be fine. I mean, he's a punter, right? So
he can't screw things up too much.
He'll do some good things. He'll do some bad things. We got him for at least 4 years. I'm on that wish train, man. Aussie, Aussie, Aussie. Oi, oi, oi. Let's do it.
Well, what's going on with Robbie Gould, man? Your guy's kicker. Does he want to go back to Chicago? Is that the deal? Or are you guys going to...
That absolutely is the deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, the Niners are nothing if not innovative. I think they're going to have the first kickerless offense in NFL history. It's really going to be a vanguard. Like they're changing the guard. This is what matters. It's going to be more like fantasy. Ignore kickers. Go on every fourth down. Go for two after every
touchdown. Why even sign a punter then? Just go for it all the time.
Yeah, all the time. Well, apparently Wisnowski, because he played Aussie rules football, is also a very good runner. And he's fast.
Oh, well,
so I'm okay. Just saying there may be a lot of fake punts in our future.
We'll see. There's the utility there. Y'all get rid of Robbie Gould anyway. Using a franchise tag on a kicker, I don't think is a smart way to go either.
I know. No, it really isn't, dude. It really isn't. But he really wants to play for Chicago. And I get it. His family's there. He played a lot of his years there. And this is another area, I think, where the Niners just don't understand positional value. Because Robbie Gould, like we think now of Robbie Gould as this super solid, amazing kicker. But we forget the reason he's not in Chicago is because he wasn't very good in Chicago and bounced around to a couple of teams and then finally revived his career in San Francisco. And the Niners have a long history of kind of rehabilitating kickers. I mean, thinking all the way back to Joe Nedney, right?
Right.
Old kickers who kind of got cut from a team because they thought they weren't good, when the reality for kickers is that because they have such a small sample size of 30, 40 kicks a year, their accurate percentage kind of flips a lot. Even though the skill of the kicker probably hasn't changed all that much.
Right.
And so rather than franchising Robbie Gould, they should probably just go out and try to find the next Robbie Gould, pay him a million or two, and call it a day. But instead, Robbie Gould's going to show up 3 days before game one, and he's going to kick, and it'll be either fine, or he's going to be in his own head, and it won't be fine. And either which way, he won't be a Niner much longer.
How long do you think he sticks around? You think he makes it the whole season?
I think he does. Yeah, okay. I think he does, because the only alternative would be the Niners releasing him, and he would need to have a pretty big regression for the Niners to release him, or they would need to trade him. And if Chicago is so dumb as to get fleeced twice by the Niners in a trade, one of which involves a kicker, that man, that's a little rich. I'd be surprised if that happened. So I don't think he gets traded. So I think he's a Niner for the whole year.
All right. Well, we'll gloss over Kyle Nelson, but recognize that he is the starting long snapper for the 49ers, but plenty of competition, in that spot. But
well, he's suspended, I think. So
Was he PEDing at the long snapper position?
Yeah, he was. I know it sounds ridiculous, but he apparently got popped for having some, it was like some supplement he didn't know was in this other supplement was taking. And so
yeah,
it was one of those situations, but it was the second time that he got hit. So we actually have, there's some weird oddity in his contract about he can come back from his suspension unless, and we sign him to like a deal, but if we don't want him, then the deal is basically void. It's weird, and honestly, I don't have the time to look in too deeply into long snapper contracts, but we've got a couple long snappers, mostly because our long snapper is suspended. Really, I think the key takeaway here is that the 49ers special teams unit is on point. It's on its best game, really.
At least you have the punter situation figured out, you know, with
at
the
least
rookie
we've
punter.
Got an Australian
you've
punter.
Got an Australian punter locked up for the next 4 years. So you guys are fine.
That is all we can say about the 49ers special team.
All right. Before we move to offense, I want you to pick one player on defense that you expect to have to make the jump in 2019. Maybe one of the younger guys or now that there's some support around a particular player that you expect to make a jump from 2018.
That's a really good question. And I'll give you, I think, three guys that immediately jump to my mind. The first is going to be Solomon Thomas. Mm. And Solomon Thomas, I think for me, is a player who was miscast his first couple of years in San Francisco. He was drafted third overall. We forget that he was a very, very high draft pick. And the Seahawks, of course, are familiar with his comp, which was Michael Bennett. And he was miscast as basically a full-time edge. And now with the alignment changes and the philosophical changes to the Niners defensive line, the new coach, Chris Kocurek, he is more of a let's go get the passer and then stop the run on the way to the passer kind of guy. And Solomon Thomas is going to be asked to do more one gap penetration as opposed to playing big end and be more of a run stuffer. And that's going to fit more of his skill set. And he is going to kick inside and rush on the interior when you've got obvious passing downs. You're going to have Dee Ford on one side. You're going to have DeForest Buckner, Solomon Thomas on the inside, and then Bosa on the other. So I think both from a philosophical perspective of what the defensive line is going to do, and I think what matches the skill set, and the fact that he went through some pretty traumatic stuff last year with his sister committing suicide, he was not in a good mental spot. And I don't know if you've ever had to try to do work while grieving, but you can't do it, and you're there, and you put on a happy face, but it's not the same. So I think he's kind of a year removed from that. He's in a better fit. He's got a better coach. Jeff Scanina, who was the old defensive line coach, just did not like Solomon Thomas. And your position coach is your gatekeeper. He was the person who was not putting him in packages and putting him in places to succeed. And finally, to the point where Kyle Shanahan had to say, yes, I would expect Solomon Thomas to play more. And that's when the position coach was like, fine. Well, Scanina's gone. And now Chris Kocurek, I think, is going to be doing things that are more in line with Solomon Thomas's traits. So I think he could be someone that takes the next step. I think it would not be unusual for Nick Bosa to take the quote unquote next step and have a similar rookie year to his brother and end up as defensive, you know, kind of rookie of the year. He really is a tactician and he is so good. And as long as he can stay healthy, and he even had a similar hamstring issue to his brother coming out of college, he could be someone who kind of jumps right into that next step without ever getting that rookie, I guess, not step. The other, I think, is Fred Warner.
Yeah.
And Fred Warner is someone who played well last year, but he is, I think, a more of a modern linebacker in that he is a good coverage defender. In college, he played the overhang position and had to cover a lot of slot guys. He transitioned that into the pros, and I think that he can also continue to get better. He still has some things to refine in terms of his recognition and play speed, but I think overall he can be someone else who takes that next step.
Yeah, I like Warner. I could see him as a guy who could make the jump, and it brings up one question for me is, especially with signing Alexander in the offseason, when you look at just roster composition, if I'm going to give the Rams credit for one thing, it's that they recognized last year that now we can pay a bunch of guys on the defensive line. We can pay a bunch of guys in the secondary. Let's just leave our linebackers and have, you know, kind of guys who can play, but you don't really need any stars there. I think when you're in the Seahawks position and you have veteran guys like Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright, it's tough to turn down players of that caliber. But I think maybe of all the teams in the NFC West that maybe the Rams have it figured out that, with the linebackers, maybe you don't really need to pay those guys.
I think you're right. And I think that the linebacker's value really comes from their ability to cover in today's NFL, because quarterbacks are taking advantage of the middle of the field more and more often. This is where good quarterbacks win games. And if I'm going to say anything about the Niners' construction of their linebacking core, at least they generally tend towards linebackers that have a coverage skill. Now, whether or not it's like such a good coverage skill that it's actually an asset is to be determined. But that's where Kwon Alexander wins. He wins as a coverage defender because of his speed. Fred Warner, also a coverage defender. And Malcolm Smith went in his prime. You know, he was an okay coverage defender, especially that one year in the Super Bowl where he had, you know, he peaked.
Right.
And then hasn't been able to get back to that since. But Dre Greenlaw, also someone who I believe is a converted safety. So they have a mold for linebacker, which does emphasize coverage, which is, I think, a good thing. But it's pretty clear that Lynch is building the 49ers defense in his Tampa Bay Buccaneers image. And when you think of those Bucs teams, they had a fantastic front. They had a linebacking core that was very, very good. And they had, of course, they had fantastic corners, but really what that Bucs defense was known for was that front seven. And I think that's where Lynch is focusing all of his efforts, and that's why we're seeing Warner and Alexander and us pay money for linebackers, is because I think roster construction in John Lynch's head is still 2002 Tampa Bay, even though now the modern NFL may be more defensive back focused.
How is that relationship between the GM Lynch and then your defensive coordinator, Robert Saleh, who's actually a former Seahawks coach as well? He was the defensive quality control coach here in 2011 through 2013.
You know, everything about Robert Saleh that comes out of the San Francisco area is super positive. I think that Robert Saleh is a respected person in that locker room. I think he is a respected tactician. I know that a lot of Niner fans kind of like to get on him. He is the Niners' Brian Schottenheimer. I'll put it that way. where he gets a bad rap for a lot of things, and he does make some kind of boneheaded decisions. But by and large, he actually calls some pretty good games. And I think this year it'll be really interesting because we've got Joe Woods as a defensive backs coach. He came from Denver. And if Joe Woods brings with him a little bit more man coverage and less zone, that could be a really big boon in the 49ers, because their talent is a little bit better suited for man. And they had so many zone drops that just left them out of position last year that I think being a little closer to the ball to make a play on it could help. So I think that he's super respected. I even saw an article a little bit ago that talked about him as a potential head coaching candidate next year. He's a very gregarious, engaging dude. I think that his star is just fine. I think the relationship is just fine. I just hope that secondary produces for him.
Well, let's move over to the offense, and let's start up at quarterback, because the San Francisco 49ers, they're bringing back all three of their starting quarterbacks, Jimmy Garoppolo, Nick Mullins, and CJ Beathard.
That's right. CJ Beathard is indeed the correct pronunciation, by the way.
I'm glad you didn't try and correct me, because we all know that's the correct pronunciation.
Absolutely. That is 100%. It is Blaine Gabbert and CJ Beathard. These are the quarterbacks. But yeah, they're going to bring all three back. It would not surprise me if all three remained on the roster. Kyle Shanahan, I think, has a clear preference for good old Beathard. CJ Beathard, for those of you who are wondering whether or not we can pronounce it correctly. But of course, he drafted him in the third round out of Iowa. Beathard has the arm to make all the throws. His problem is his processing speed. He doesn't get the ball out quickly, and as a result, takes a lot of hits. And you hear it on the broadcast over and over again, this guy's so tough, this guy's so tough. I don't know that you want the defining characteristic for a quarterback to be tough because he can take a lot of hits.
I think Jimmy Garoppolo, handsome Jimmy, would disagree. I think being able to take a lot of hits would be good for him to be able to stay in the game.
Oh, no, he is going out of bounds heretofore, trust me. But Nick Mullins doesn't have the arm strength to make all the throws, and yet he processes the game much faster. And that shows up in his ability to succeed in the NFL. But man, when he tries to throw the ball more than like 15 yards downfield, it's not great. It's not good. So Jimmy Garoppolo, of course, we're back to where we were last year with him. I mean, you have 10 games of sample size, and that's a decent sample, and he's performed very well in that sample, but it's still not even a full season.
Right.
So I think, you know, obviously quarterback is the most important thing for an NFL franchise, and if he can perform at close to the level that we expected him to going into last year, I think the 49ers are absolutely in that mix for the wild card.
Well, he, you know, Jimmy had that amazing run at the end of the 2017 season going 5-0, and expectations were so high going into that 2018 season. And then for him to get injured in, what was it, just the third game of the season, to really have kind of now the same expectations that were coming out of 2017. But now there's also, it's kind of balanced out with the injury concerns of being able to stay healthy for a full season.
Yeah, there's not a lot of the weight of expectations is not as high this year in San Francisco, which I think is good, because I think they got a little, they were a little too like Drake. They were a little too into their feelings about how good they could be. And I think that now they've had a bit of that humble pie. They know it takes a lot more work. And I think it will, even though it probably delayed the success of the team, I think it will probably be better long term if they're not trying to play up to those expectations and then are just trying to play football.
Let's move on to running back, because you guys, you brought in a high priced free agent last season. You did it again this season, signing Tevin Coleman. And you guys also have Matt Breida, who has been a very solid running back as well. So I have to expect that you feel pretty good about having that trio of running backs on the roster. But you're also a very, you know, when it comes to the running game, you've talked about how running back ranks just above punter in your mind.
This is accurate. So I think it's one of those situations where I do think they have one of the more talented running back units in the NFL. I think Matt Breida is a gem as an undrafted free agent. The leap he made last year from his rookie year, basically he had no ability to impact the passing game whatsoever. And then you get to last year and he was one of the highest graded pass catching running backs in the NFL. And he gritted out the entire season on a high ankle sprain. That dude is a warrior. And instead of like leveraging that contract and saying, well, we're paying him like almost nothing because he's an undrafted free agent, let's go and spend that money on someone like Jerick McKinnon. Okay, I get that. Probably overpaid a little bit. But then you bring in Tevin Coleman for $2 million and it's like, all right, now you're in a spot where you're competing for touches. Maybe you have to cut someone because you've got Raheem Mostert, who also played well in stretches last year. And he broke his arm, but he's a very, very good special teams person. You've got Tevin Coleman, who, of course, is probably a favorite of Shanahan. You've got Jerick McKinnon, who we've yet to see in this offense, but I think can provide the dual threat that Shanahan wants. And you've got Breida. And then, of course, you've got Kyle Juszczyk at the fullback position. That's a lot of spots to be taken up by running back. And who knows? Maybe you get an injury and things kind of settle themselves out. But I think it may be a little bit more prudent to spend that extra spot on a corner that you may want to develop and not expose to waivers. But if you put that kind of roster construction stuff aside, it is a really talented offensive group, and Kyle Shanahan can do a lot with his running backs. And he's shown a predisposition towards playing a lot of running backs over the course of his tenure here in San Francisco. I mean, the 49ers lead the league consistently in 21 offensive personnel. I mean, they basically, that's their thing. They are bucking the 11 personnel trend, which is three wide receivers. That's most of what Schottenheimer runs. But they run it 42% of the time in 2018. The league average was 8% of the time. So that is something that fits what they want to build, and having lots of running backs, not getting injured and having to go to off the street free agents, which they did at times last year. That's probably something Kyle Shanahan wants to avoid.
Well, and that was, you know, McKinnon was that big free agent offseason signing the previous year. And then for him to get injured and then Coleman to come on the market and having that Shanahan Falcons connection, right, to Coleman, maybe that's just it. Maybe that's what his preference was. And now he has that guy. And if injuries happen this year, now you have at least one of those players to be able to fill that role that he didn't have last year.
Yeah, and there's lots of people that think that Coleman will eventually be the quote-unquote starter in San Francisco, at least for fantasy purposes. I know oftentimes he gets drafted before Jerick McKinnon, which I think is a bit of a mistake, but I get it. I mean, Tevin Coleman ran probably one of my favorite routes from the Atlanta days when Shanahan was there, where he ran a sail route from the backfield into the corner of the end zone, and it was beautiful. I mean, it opened up like the Red Sea parting, and so I can definitely see Shanahan playing that in his mind as he's thinking like, okay, if McKinnon goes down, I don't want to be left scrapping a whole chunk of my playbook, because that's effectively what he had to do last
right.
year. And so I think that, you know, it's definitely a depth play and we'll see how it plays out. But I do think that you're going to see some down roster impact where maybe you can't keep as many linebackers or you can't keep as many corners, and that may come back to bite them. But I think the fan in me is excited. Let's go and throw all the passes to running backs and let's see what happens.
Let's move on to the guys that you're normally supposed to throw the passes to at wide receiver. You guys bring back Dante Pettis, Marquise Goodwin, and I want to talk draft because something interesting happened in the NFC West. The 49ers, you guys take Deebo Samuel in the second round. Then you turn around and draft Jalen Hurd in the third round. You have the Seahawks drafting wide receiver in the second round and the fourth round. Also another guy in the seventh round. And then the Arizona Cardinals, they drafted receivers early as well. They drafted Andy Isabella in the second round, I believe, and then Hakeem Butler in round four. So out of all of the NFC West teams, I know you must have studied the draft knowing that that wide receiver was a position that the 49ers were going to go after in the draft. Which team do you think got the best pair of wide receivers?
Oh, man, that's a good question. So I really, really like Andy Isabella. I think he is going to be a good receiver in the NFL, and I don't think he's just a little like slot guy. I think he has the technique to play outside as well, despite his size. I like Hakeem Butler a lot. I do think fourth round was probably about right for him. I don't think he should have been like a first round overall kind of prospect. But I think fourth round
was good. A lot
of
people were talking about him as a first round guy.
Yeah, I do think Arizona probably eked out the best collection of receivers. I do think the Niners, I love the Deebo Samuel pick. He is exactly what Kyle Shanahan needs. He's basically built like a running back, played a lot of slot in college, but the dude can separate. On slant routes, he is ridiculous. I'd almost want to like put it on the drinking game where the Better Rivals drinking game where like he catches a slant and goes to the house because his separation on intermediate routes is incredible. But Jalen Hurd is probably where if you want to put the Niners at the top of that list, he's what holds him back a little bit. He's a bit of a project. I've kind of warmed up to him and what he can offer to the 49ers because I think the Niners are trying to go into that big slot mold. Jordan Matthews, of course, they signed as a free agent.
Right.
And the big slot is what he does. That's where he makes his money. And Jalen Hurd, despite his size, the dude's 6'5", he played a ridiculous amount in the slot.
Interesting.
He's actually 6'4". But he had a slow 40. It may have been because of a knee injury, but overall, he is a slot receiver. And so I think the Niners are probably trying to get a little bigger in the slot and then deploy Marquise as more of that deep speed with Deebo Samuel in that intermediate area taking over the Pierre Garçon role. So I would say that that's probably where, like, it's probably a tie between, because, I mean, the Seahawks, oh man, that's the one, like, I wasn't a big fan of DK Metcalf. I really wasn't.
But were you a little bit disappointed when he went off the board at 64, knowing that you guys could have gone with another receiver early in round three?
No, I don't think that I would have liked the Niners to get him. I don't think that he would have succeeded in the 49ers system, and he wouldn't have been very good at what the 49ers asked him to do.
Okay, but that's
man,
fair.
But what can he do? He can run straight. And he can run fast. And what does Russell Wilson do? Probably better than most quarterbacks in the NFL right now, throw the deep ball with a ridiculous amount of touch. And I do think that DK Metcalf is like a poor man's Terrell Owens. And Terrell Owens had a much more robust route tree, but they were both big physical dudes who were ungodly fast. People that big shouldn't be that fast.
Right.
And he can do it in a straight line. Don't ask the dude to change directions because you'll do it all the way clear to Thursday. But if he can run straight and Russell Wilson can just hit his hitch and throw it over the top, I think it's going to cause some fits. And so I think in terms of fit, that's where I didn't want him to go, even though I don't think he's a good wide receiver. So I think ultimately the Seahawks have got a really, really good fit, and that's probably where I would put them up on the same area as the 49ers in terms of the receivers they drafted, with Arizona probably being the clear kind of winner in the draft, at least right now.
Well, it's interesting that we're on a similar page when it comes to Metcalf, because he's probably one of the more hyped guys that was in the draft. And I think a lot of that was due to his 40 time. But, you know, Deebo Samuel was a guy that was probably, he was probably the guy that I liked more out of all the receivers, even Brown out of Oklahoma.
Yeah, and that was a thing this year, was there were a lot of wide receivers in that second round area. That's where the value was.
Right.
But it just depended on what flavor you wanted. And Deebo Samuel was the Niners' flavor wide receiver. That's the guy they wanted to go after. A.J. Brown was the other one the Niners targeted, but he went to New England, of course, at the end of the first. That probably was my favorite. If the Niners would have drafted A.J. Brown, that would have been amazing. But they ended up with Deebo Samuel, who I still think can be a good pro. He fits what the Niners do. DK Metcalf fits what the Seahawks do. That's just their flavor, right? He wasn't my flavor. That doesn't mean he's not going to be a good wide receiver.
Well, and I think we were talking about special teams earlier, and now you guys have a special teamer spot locked up, I think, for Samuel.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so I don't know. I know that Kyle Shanahan values the skill of punt returning because I think of what it does to your vision in the open field. But I don't know that he likes to play his starting wide receivers as punt returners, because Dante Pettis was also a very, very good punt returner at Washington. And he doesn't get a lot of opportunities to return kicks.
Mm.
Deebo Samuel, also very good at returning kicks and returning punts. He's had a couple that he's taken back to the house in college. I don't know that he's necessarily going to return punts or kicks either.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I think Kyle Shanahan does like that skill, but he likes it more for what it does for you on the field, and I don't know that he likes to expose his wide receivers to hits like that.
Well, of course, we know who the best receiver is on the team. It's the guy who plays as the number one tight end, George Kittle, who I was looking at stats. Somebody pointed out, and maybe you pointed this out on Twitter, Oscar, or it could have been Niners Nation, but if you match up his yards after the catch, that he's number two of all the tight ends when they get all of their yards just out of his draft class. Something crazy like
that's accurate. Yeah, it was a stat that the PFF Niners account posted that I retweeted, and I basically said, if you tie one arm behind George Kittle's back, he's
right.
Still better than most of the tight ends from his class. Because you're exactly right. If you just take his yards after the catch this year, it is second on the list of tight ends from his class if you take all of their
yards.
That
was just from this year, yards after the catch?
It may have been this year, it may have been career, but
okay.
Well, he's a rookie, so it was only this. Oh, no, it's a second
yes.
year, so it may have been both years.
Okay.
But I mean, this year, he basically broke records for most yards after the catch. And it was, I mean, it's ridiculous. He's logged the most yards after catch that PFF has in their database for a tight end, I believe. I might fact check myself on that one a little bit later, but it was ridiculous. He averaged like 9 yards
yeah.
after the catch or reception. It's stupid. And that goes to the system that Kyle Shanahan's built, where he's throwing him open. It goes to his athleticism, because he can outrun lots of people. He really is tailor-made for this system, and I'm so happy that he's a 49er, because he is awesome.
It burns me that you guys got Kittle, because he was, I think that you may have picked him maybe just a spot or two before the Seahawks in that round, and that was in round 5, I think, that you guys ended up getting him a couple years back.
Well, I think the Zach from Three Sigma Athlete, who is also a Seahawks fan, he runs the P-Spark site where
right.
he measures athleticism, and that's where a lot of the athleticism scores that we like are pulled from. And he was on the George Kittle train from the get-go, because George Kittle was the best athlete in that tight end class. He was a ridiculous athlete based on his testing scores. And so Zach was beating the drum for Kittle on Twitter, and then he gets drafted by the Niners, and I could literally see his poor heart crush in real time.
Yeah.
It was awful.
Zach Whitman, 3SigmaAthlete.com. That's definitely a go-to site to check out guys' athleticism. And yeah, Kittle, man, there's guys on each team that you really respect, that you kind of don't want to have to go up against them twice a year. And Kittle's that way with the 49ers. Of course, Aaron Donald with the LA Rams. And then Larry Fitzgerald, who he's getting up there in his career, but he's still one of those Cardinals that you know that he's probably going to catch at least a touchdown or two on you at any point in the season.
Yeah, I think that the NFC West is it's shaping up to be a really, really fun division. Because I think you have Kingsbury, of course, is going to bring some innovative offense to Arizona. And Kyler Murray, I think he's going to be good. I really do. And I think he's going to be good in that system. I'm not looking forward to facing him. I would have preferred they stuck with Josh Rosen.
Right.
but you've got Russell Wilson, who also a good quarterback. And you've got some danger with DK Metcalf. And you've got, of course, the Niners, who have Kyle Shanahan. And so, you know, he can do lots of things with George Kittle. This is going to be a fun, fun division, and the Rams, of course, are the Rams. So, I mean, it could go lots of ways. I think this is not the the NFC West of the 80s, where the Niners were like going up against the Atlanta Falcons and the Seattle Seahawks, or not Seattle, and the New Orleans Saints, who were just kind of perennially bad. And so you could always pencil in the Niners if they were just above a certain line and as division champions. But yeah, I think it's going to be a very interesting division. And I'm interested to see how it comes out, because they backloaded some of the division games. But Seattle and Arizona week 10, 11, and we get the Rams week 6. And then it starts into the division in earnest in week 9, I think, because then 9, 10, 11, three division games back to back. And then you get Green Bay, and then you get a week where you get Baltimore. And then you hit New Orleans, Atlanta, Rams, Seattle. I mean, this is going to be a really interesting year for the 49ers. But I do think they probably are, talent-wise, hovering around that 8-8, 9-7 area. If things break their way, they could get to 9-10 wins. But if things don't break their way, they could end up with like 6 or 7.
How are you feeling about the offensive line?
I think the offensive line is fine.
Yeah.
Weston Richburg is the biggest like kind of shoulder shrug. But he hopefully is going to bounce back, because he had a knee injury that was plaguing him all year. And hopefully he gets back to the center that he was when we were excited that we signed him as a free agent, because he is a move center. He's someone who can execute those reach blocks, but he just has not been able to do those things in San Francisco well. But I think when you move outside of the center, you're pretty solid along the offensive line. Laken Tomlinson has turned into a really solid player. Mm-hmm. Mike Person was someone who, you know, you found on the scrap heap. He was an Atlanta guy who came over, and he's beat out the first round pick, Joshua Garnett, for that starting guard spot. He's probably the presumptive starter, but even if he loses the job, he loses it to Joshua Garnett, who's got a first round pedigree. And then you got Mike McGlinchey and Joe Staley on the tackles. And those, Joe Staley's still playing at an incredibly high level. He's still a top 10 tackle in the NFL. And Mike McGlinchey's on his way there. He's basically a mini Staley. So I think the improvements in the Niners running game last year was due in large part to the offensive line. And now, as long as McGlinchey takes the next step as a pass protector, I think the Niners line is set for a long time.
Okay, so we've talked now about a lot of the other teams in the NFC West. And I'm watching with interest on that Arizona team too, because you actually sound pretty high on Kingsbury.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, like, being a head coach in the NFL is hard. You can be a great offensive mind and still not be a good head coach. And I think that Kingsbury is going to bring some innovative concepts to the NFC West and to the NFL in general. Whether or not that means he's going to be a successful head coach, I don't know. There's a lot of things that go into the administration and the people that you hire that, you know, you can't always necessarily control. I mean, hell, even Bill Belichick failed, I wouldn't say he failed, but even he had a rocky first head coaching gig before he became the Bill Belichick, of course, that we know and love. And your Pete Carroll did the same thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
You had some success, but it was kind of, and then he goes to college, comes back, and is now the Pete Carroll that's won, you know, a Super Bowl. So I'm very intrigued to see what Kingsbury does in Arizona, because I do think his offense can win in the NFL. I think he has his handpicked quarterback. And I think from his draft picks, the team that he's trying to build is, as a 49ers fan, kind of scary, because he's picking wide receivers, he's got his quarterback, he's going to throw the ball. And that, I think, for the secondary that the Niners are throwing out there, may not be a good proposition.
My concern with Arizona, though, is on their offensive line. I know they've done some things to address it up front, but it's kind of going after guys that are questionable as to whether or not they're going to be successful along that offensive line. So that's the biggest question mark for me. And while they're picking wide receivers, there were guys that they could have been picking to protect their quarterback.
Yeah, I think that there's probably, I mean, look, their offensive line is just, it's not good, right? There's no way that you can sit out here and say that you're trotting out, you know, Cole Mason and Justin Pugh and Marcus Gilbert, that you're super excited about that. But I think that you can hide a not successful offensive line with quick throws and with offensive, you can scheme protection a little bit more then you can necessarily, you know, kind of say that, well, my wide receivers are terrible, and so they're going to just run around and be blanketed by subpar corners. The wide receiver, I think, is more important to the passing game. Your tackles are really where you have to win.
Yeah.
So if Marcus Gilbert and DJ Humphries can provide a little bit of protection, I think they'll be okay. But this is the team that, I mean, they are building up, right? I don't know that that Kingsbury is going to have like a 1 year, oh, turn him around and put him in the playoffs kind of thing. I think he got his skill position, he got his quarterback, and now he, you know, he has some time to go and build that line.
All right. Well, if you had to predict the order that these NFC West teams finish in, where do you go?
I think the Rams finish first, Niners finish second, Seattle finish third, Arizona finishes fourth.
Oh, you're dropping us all the way down to third. I didn't think you were just going to come on the show and be a homer, Oscar.
You know what? I have to. I am as honest as I can be about the team, but at my core, I'm still a fan. I do think that Seattle and the 49ers are going to compete for the wild card spot. And it would not surprise me if Seattle ends up second.
Yeah.
But I do think it's going to be that battle between them two for that wild card spot.
I'm having deja vu. I think that's exactly what you told me last year.
You know, this is going to be a thing. You know how Buffalo and the Niners were Boomer's yes. Super Bowl picks forever, right? This is going to be my thing. I'm going to come on every year.
I think it's turning around to where Buffalo's building back up and San Francisco's is, you know, coming back. So, you know, maybe Boomer needs to go back to that pick every year again.
Yeah, I'm just going to say every year it's going to be 2-3. Seattle and the Niners are going to be competing for that wild card. That's my thing.
I don't know. I like the Rams to take a step back this year. I think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I could see them regress a little bit. I'm interested to see what happens with Gurley's knee,
yeah,
whether or not he still has one. And so but I do think that Sean McVay will figure that out. And I do think they still have Wade Phillips. They still have some pieces, but it's going to definitely be, I think, a bit more on Jared Goff. And I think we'll see a bit more of that. They will regress a little bit, but even if they regress, I still think they have the talent and the scheme to continue to win and continue to play at a high level.
Ooh, how much longer before Goff is the worst quarterback in the division?
Now, that is an interesting question. That is a really, really good question. I don't know the answer to that.
Would you pay Jared Goff if you're the Rams?
Oh, God. I think I would.
Yeah.
Question mark. but this is where I'm spoiled by the Niners contracts, because I just think it's super easy for a team to sign a player to a contract where there's a bunch of options.
Sure.
Where there's a bunch of annual options where they can just pull the ripcord when they don't get production, or if the player gets injured, he doesn't get game checks, and so he doesn't count as much against the cap. Because the Niners contracts are always signed that way. That's the only reason that we were able to get out of Kaepernick's contract with minimal impact.
Well, although, you know, we talk about you guys going out and spending big money on players, that's one thing that John Lynch has done really, really well, is though the contracts seem big at first, if the players don't work out, they're gone.
Yeah, well, it's Parag Marate really who does that, and he's the basically the capologist. Oh, he's the guy who's
was
been,
he a carryover from the previous GM?
He's been a carryover for a while now. So he's basically an owner confidant, Jed York. And he, Parag Marate kind of worked his way up through the ranks in San Francisco. And he was doing contracts for pretty much the last three or four head coaching regimes. And so this has been really a fine-tuned machine when it comes to contracts that has predated Lynch, but Lynch is still reaping the rewards.
Well, Oscar, I think we pretty much covered it. Is there anything with this team that you want to say before we get out of here?
No, other than I think, you know, if you're not familiar with the 49ers roster and you like the key takeaways are their secondary, probably not great, Bob. Defensive line, very good. And and running back is going to be great. Wide receiver, a little untested. But overall, they're a team that if someone's trying to tell you like 10, 11 wins, Super Bowl, you can tell them to shut the hell up. But this team shouldn't be near the bottom of the NFL or the bottom of the division anymore.
And if some Seahawks fans have some 49ers fans that they want to tell about your show, where do they go to find it?
They can go to NinersNation.com and look for the Better Rivals podcast. They can always follow me on Twitter as well. It's at Better Rivals. I'm happy to be honest about the team, trash talk the team, and just generally have fun in, you know, a super fun way, because I think sports should be fun.
And honestly, if Seahawks fans haven't told their 49ers friends about your show yet and they listen to our show, They're not being a good friend, because we've done this for a while
now.
Yeah,
basically, you're a terrible human. You're a terrible human. It's basically like Adrian Peterson, Kareem Hunt, and you.
Put yourself in that category.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Wow. Well, Oscar, I really want to thank you once again for coming on and breaking down the 49ers offseason. And we'll look forward to talking to you right around midseason when the Seahawks come on down to Santa Clara.
Absolutely. Week 10. Let's do it. It's always good being on, man. Thanks for having me.
A big thanks once again to Oscar for coming on the show. I always enjoy talking to him. And a happy Blue Friday to those of you listening right away when this show comes out on July 12th. Next Friday, the 19th, is going to be the last Blue Friday before training camp starts on July 25th. The season is here, and we're going to get Adam back on with his work schedule quieting down here in August. He might even join us for the Rams show here next week. One more quick reminder that you can go to podcastawards.com and nominate the Seahawkers podcast for the 14th annual Podcast Awards. Nominate us in the sports category. Another thing you can do, you can go to getintheflock.com to help support the show. A big thanks to Randy Peterson. Gave us a raise last week from $1 up to $3 a month. I need to get stickers in the mail to Randy, too. And I know a few others are waiting on stickers and patches. So if you want to get in on that, I'll be hitting the post office up here in the next couple weeks. Go to getintheflock.com and you can support the show there, and we'll send you a little something. Well, I teased it last week, and I was happy to see the U.S. women's team back up all their talk, back up my talk, after they got into the finals, and they go and they get the 2-0 win over the Netherlands, which makes them back-to-back champions. Very rare to see back-to-back champions. The women got it done. And so, for the U.S. women's team, better at life than Skip Bayless. And I've got to be a little bit honest here, because I'm a little bit baffled by this equal pay argument that I keep hearing about. Shouldn't the girls be arguing that they should be getting more than the U.S. men's team because they're better? I saw a stat that the U.S. women's team earned around $4 million for the win, for the World Cup win, which is a lot. But then I saw that the U.S. men's team, just for making it into the round of 16 5 years ago, got nearly $6 million. $2 million more for making it not as far, which I have no idea if the payout's based on a portion of the overall ad revenue. How are they come up with the amount? I'm completely out of my element. I'm ignorant on this when it comes to the details. I'll admit that. But I do know that every 4 years, I'm pretty much guaranteed to watch our women's team go deep into the tournament. Meanwhile, the men's team has made it to the quarterfinals exactly one time in my lifetime. I think in all of our lifetimes. And so, and I don't even really start paying attention till then. I'm just saying, to me, as someone who's paid a lot more attention to Women's World Cup ever in my life than Men's World Cup, I don't know why they aren't making more. What's the intrinsic value of Better at Life honors? It probably doesn't make up the difference. And with that, there's only one thing left to say. Go Hawks!